You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is Civic Media Mornings. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And one of the best sentences of the winter, pitchers and catchers report. The Brewers pitchers and catchers report today in Phoenix. Oh, my goodness. We couldn't be happier about that. That means, yes, baseball is coming. Warm weather is hopefully following. But if you're in AmFam Field, it doesn't matter what the weather outside is, because inside it's always lovely. Let's talk a little baseball, because things are cooking. Brewers President of Business Operations, Rick Schlesinger, joins us. He's entering his 23rd season with the Brewers. He is seventh in this position. He oversees all the business operations that the Brewers have. He oversees the field in Phoenix, everything. And he's here with us now. Rick, thanks for being here. We appreciate it. And we are so excited that pitchers and catchers are reporting today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun when we go through a really cold winter to start thinking baseball. Yes. And spring training. And, you know, the season will start before you know it on March 26th.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, against the Sox, that'll be a nice opening weekend. Let's start here, Rick, because there was a big announcement recently that Brewers games this year are going to be broadcast on MLB instead of FanDuel Wisconsin. What went into that deal, and how is that going to change the fan experience for viewing the Brewer games?
Sure. You know, we just had some uncertainties about FanDuel and their situation going into the 2026 season, and you know, we couldn't wait any longer to see if that their situation would be resolved. So we made the decision on January 31 to switch to MLB Media, joining 15 other clubs. And for the average fan, they won't notice any difference. They'll still be available to watch all the live Brewers games on cable, on satellite, and a streaming service, just a different package. Instead of going to FanDuel for your streaming, you'll go to MLB and Brewers.com, and they will provide you with all the details on how to buy the streaming subscription. And again, you know, if you watched on cable last year or watched on satellite, you'll watch it the same, maybe a different channel. But, you know, we're going to have about 145 games, and, you know, so the average fan won't notice any difference. I think the production quality will be better. We're excited to partner with baseball. And, again, we wanted certainty for the fans and no interruption in the games, and that's why we made the switch when we did.
Since the Brewers are a small market team, Rick, how important are these types of changes to expand the team's reach nationally?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously every dollar is precious, and we look to, you know, generate revenue where we can, and television revenues are important. And it's sort of an interesting and somewhat of a challenging ecosystem for media these days, as everybody knows who's in the business. But for our purposes, the most important goal was to make sure that our fans had wide access to our live games. And because of our relationship with MLB, this is possible. I think the future of television will be very different. I think there'll be more national packages, so you'll see more games on national packages. But ultimately, you're going to be able to get every game that the Brewers play on some kind of device and some kind of service. Cable and satellite aren't dead. They're slowly eroding, but they're not dead. They're still a real big source of eyeballs for us. But streaming, obviously, is the future, and we want to make sure our games are accessible and affordable packages for everybody.
And the streaming thing, what was it, $99 for the season to stream anywhere, which makes it wonderful for a fan who may not be in front of the TV or is traveling or wherever they want to go to be able to catch the Brewers.
Yeah, if you're in Wisconsin, it's very easy. Even if you're outside the state, if you're a Brewers fan who lives in Utah or Colorado, you are able to go to ESPN Unlimited and MLB.tv and access all the Brewers games. So, perfect. Regardless of where you are as a Brewers fan, you're going to be able to get those games live on your device.
All right, let's talk a little baseball here because Rick Schlesinger, Brewers president of business operations, joining us entering his 23rd season. We mentioned that pitchers and catchers report today. You guys have been super busy already in this offseason. The trade of Caleb Durbin and Andrew Montesterio, we just learned about that. I'm sure there's going to be some other roster moves down the road, but how are some of these moves going to shape the overall team and the depth this season and what you guys are feeling going into training camp?
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at what Matt Arnold and his baseball operations staff have done over the last several years, and you really got to admire what they've done. There have been moves that some people have scratched their heads about or have not really understood, and they've worked out quite well. It doesn't mean you're going to, you know, bat 1,000 in every one of your trades or acquisitions. But, you know, the one thing we know about this game is pitchers are key. And the more pitching depth you have, the better you're able to sustain injuries and just poor performances. And the reality is, you know, we're building a rotation with some great live arms, both, you know, Woodruff and Mizorowski, Priester, Chad Patrick, as well as some guys in the minors who are really ready to step up and join the rotation. But I'm really confident what Matt's doing. And again, you know, we're the three-time defending NL Central champs, won the most games in baseball last year, but we have some unfinished business. The season ended abruptly against the Dodgers. We want to progress, get to the World Series, win the World Series. So, you know, I'm pretty confident in Matt's ability, and there's certainly other transactions between now and opening day.
Well, Rick, you mentioned the Brewers have won three consecutive NL Central division titles. That is, they're going for history this year to try to win the fourth. No, teams just don't do that. That's great. But the question that if I don't ask this, and I know this really is a Matt Arnold question, but if I don't ask it, people will be hammering me all day. Who's going to play third base?
Well, we did acquire a guy, Hamilton, who from the Red Sox, who certainly can play there. We've got some interesting opportunities for guys who have experience at third base. And again, remember, between now and opening day, there's still a lot of time to
make
deals.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel pretty confident that we'll have a third baseman.
That's good.
It's good.
And it may be a couple of guys, but yeah, I never count Matt Arnold and his team out when they make these deals because they're always playing chess, and you know they're thinking four moves ahead. So
sure.
I am very confident that when we start on March 26 against the White Sox at home, that it's going to be a heck of a lineup.
Now, you guys had a really young team last year. Are there, and you mentioned some of the players from the minors. You mentioned the Miz, who became a fan favorite last year. Everybody was so excited about him. Are there any young players or prospects that we should be keeping an eye on that you guys are really excited about right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the names that people talk about are Jesus Vade, who's a phenomenal player, Cooper Pratt, who's extremely great defensive player already in the minors, whose bat will come around. And then a whole slew of young pitchers that we acquired in the last couple of trades. Jesus Mate is sort of, you know, a phenom. He's really young. I don't expect him to be in the majors this year, but you know, he's still a teenager, can't legally drink and won't be able to legally drink for a while. But I think this is a guy who's going to have potential superstar written all over him. And I definitely expect him in Milwaukee very, very soon. Again, maybe in 27 or 28. But yeah, the farm system was ranked number one by almost every publication in baseball. And it's a testament, you know, to all the hard work that our baseball operations staff does, both domestically and internationally, in signing guys from all over the world.
Rick Schlesinger is our guest. He is, of course, the Brewers president of business operations. We talked about how people can watch the Brewers games on their devices, on their TVs, but we really want people in the seats. Tomorrow's a big day, Rick. Single game tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10. People just go to MLB.com/Brewers, right, to buy their tickets, or Brewers.com?
Yeah, Brewers.com is the easiest place to go. It's a couple of clicks, and starting tomorrow at 10 a.m., single-game tickets will go on sale. We've obviously been selling season ticket packages and theme night packages already, but yeah, this is sort of a big milestone when the individual games go on sale, because it's, you know, fans like to pick and choose which games they play, teams they want to see, and the schedule is a really good one for us this year in terms of good opponents, a lot of American League opponents, and a good mix. So, yeah, we expect a lot of sales tomorrow starting at 10 a.m.
As we're looking at that 2026 schedule, we mentioned that the home opener is against the Chicago White Sox on Thursday, March 26. What are some of the other key matchups that you have highlighted on your calendar personally that you're most excited about for this team?
Yeah, well, I always, you know, I'm at every game, so, you know, it becomes sort of every game's highlighted. But obviously the Cubs series, when we play them, we have two series against them. And Yankees come into town, and like I said, a good slew of interleague games. But our division has gotten very interesting. The Pirates, you know, have been really stacking up. They've been spending money and bringing in some really good players. The Reds are always a wild card. They can be really good or struggle. Cardinals probably would tell you they're sort of rebuilding, but again, it's going to be a wide open division. Cubs are a key element here. As we all know, it's the rivalry. That's a bitter rivalry and magnified by, you know, our epic 5-game series in the playoffs last year. So, you know, for me, I'm at every game. I would love to see everybody come to every game, but I realize people have lives and jobs and it's not always, you know, they're not getting paid to watch baseball games like I am, but, yeah, it's going to be a great schedule because, you know, we have more interleague games. Every other year, every American League team comes and plays in Milwaukee, which is great. Oh, wow. So we can see some stars from the other league. So, yeah, good slew of American League opponents this year.
Rick, let's talk about the fan experience. Any big changes coming to AmFam Field for the fans? And also, I am a sucker for the giveaways and the theme nights. What are we looking at for those this year?
Yeah, so we've got a number of projects coming online. We have redone the kids play area on the field level. It's called the Glove Playground by Aurora Healthcare. Some brand new features for kids, a complete new experience, new Bernie slide, a sausage race opportunity game. So that's always fun. And then in the summer, we're going to open up the UW Credit Union Plaza behind center field outside, which is going to feature a beer garden, a stage for live music, mini golf, a play area. And that's just phase one. Phase two will be more integrated food areas. We're upgrading our food selections at the Alley Food Truck and Third Street Market Hall. And, yeah, a lot of bobbleheads, giveaways, theme nights. Yeah. You know, we probably have, you know, 30 dates that are either a heritage night, a theme night, or a giveaway. So there's a lot of reasons to come to the ballpark besides watching the Brewers.
Oh, it's always a good time when you end up at AmFam. Now, obviously, you mentioned you're at every game. You watch games in a little different perspective than the fans, Rick. But do you have a favorite game day event or something that you really look forward to when you're there watching a game? Something that you just enjoy every single time and you never get tired of?
Yeah, usually when we win, that's a good game day event that I feel happy about. And go
of course.
Home, drive home happy. But, you know, I'm not that superstitious, but I generally don't sit when I'm watching the games. I'm doing a lot of pacing or walking around. We obviously have, you know, guests that we want to say hello to and sponsors and things like that. So I'm usually kind of a little antsy and a little bit anxious just because, you know, I'm a passionate Brewers fan. You have to be to work in this game. I try to be social to people, but you know I'm watching the games.
Don't talk to me right now.
Play, I'm happy. Yeah, don't talk to me. We could talk after the game, before the game, but during the game, I'm not always the most pleasant person. But it's just because I'm passionate.
All right, makes sense. Now people listening to you, Rick, and Rick Schlesinger is our guest. He's the president of business operation for the Brewers. There's people who are like, that is a dream job, work around baseball all the time. And it sounds like it is, but there has to be, other than the fact that it's a long schedule, there has to be some little downfall. We got about 10 seconds. What's the one downside that people wouldn't believe?
I would say, you know, the hours you have to commit. You're going to be working during the season, get in the office at 9 a.m. and not leaving until 11 p.m. and you have 10-game homestands. It's a lot of time.
It is. Well, thank you for being here, Rick. Again, single-game tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. Go to brewers.com, get your tickets. Rick Schlesinger, our guest, the president of business operations for the Brewers. Rick, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon, and good luck.
You're listening to the Civic Media Network. This is Civic Media Mornings.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. And if you're in Eau Claire, listening on the tap on 93.5, or maybe in La Crosse on WLCX, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and I'm in a better mood now because we talked a little baseball with Rick Schlesinger. That is excellent. And a reminder, you can listen to Brewers games all along the network as the season begins. But listen, this Jamie, this is our senior producer Frank's least favorite segment of the program. That's why I want to milk it for as long as I can. The Olympics are happening, and I'm invested. And here's the thing, and you can answer this at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Frank made a point yesterday. He said, do you watch any of these sports outside of the Olympics?
No.
And no, I don't.
No.
But does that matter because it's the Olympics? And I say it's no. What say you? Give us a holler. And tell us, if you're watching the Olympics, what you're watching for. Because yesterday, man, disappointment, yet still excitement.
Yes.
A lot of great stuff happening. I've been taken by the Corys, the partners from Duluth in curling, who were playing against Sweden for the gold medal yesterday. And just like their play-in game to get to the gold medal game, it came down to the last slide of the stone. Unfortunately,
yes.
Sweden this time had the last slide, and they beat them. But it doesn't matter. Corey Thiessen is the first woman to ever earn an Olympic medal in curling. So congratulations to the Corys for their silver, and the Duluth Curling Club for supporting. That was very exciting. Stop it. Frank, I watched USA versus Canada ladies hockey yesterday. Let me tell you something about those women. They are hitting. They're not playing.
No,
this is not powder puff hockey.
No.
These women are taking people to the boards. It was unbelievable. And the USA comes out on top over their heated rivals, Canada, with three Badger players scoring in the game. The Badgers make up a nice chunk of this Team USA for ladies hockey.
I just want to jump in here.
Don't you? There's no counterpoint to my point.
No,
there is a point here.
Is it that the game didn't matter?
I watch hockey, therefore, I will watch the women's hockey team.
Did you watch yesterday?
I did not. I forgot. That's not the point, Brian. Now our listeners think I don't watch hockey.
No, you watch hockey.
You watch hockey.
But you don't watch you don't watch the rest of the Olympics because you don't watch it. Is it a point of pride that you just say, if I don't watch these sports all the time, I'm not going to watch them
I think it's genuinely like my interest level.
Sure.
Like my wife was sitting on the couch and I heard audio and I was like, what are you watching? She goes, ice dancing. I said, ice dancing? When do you care about ice dancing?
For 50 weeks and three years, I don't care about ice dancing.
No, I don't care at all.
But for 2 weeks, I'll go, look at those people. That's amazing. It is. It's amazing.
Don't you think it's a camaraderie that you feel and a pride that you feel watching your country and all of these athletes put it all on the line, and people get excited about that because we all have that competitive streak in us a little bit, even if we don't want to admit it, and we should all have a little pride.
Frank is rooting for Belarus. He doesn't care about the USA.
Belarus? Whoa.
You heard it. I don't take it back.
Think I'm a commie now.
Is that a hot take this morning? My goodness. Yeah. The one sport that last night we were watching the Olympics for a few minutes, I took a little bit of a break and I was in the living room and I sat down and we were watching speed skating, and it was a relay speed skating event.
Yes.
And my husband goes, what is happening right now? He's like, there's three lanes of people going in a circle. I said, it's a relay. So watch. I said, they're going to push off. And he goes, They butt push? He's like, what is happening? He goes, I don't understand any of what's happening. So I get it, but he was
engrossed. How do you not
understand?
You got to skate really fast in a circle. It's very rudimentary.
But he was
engrossed. You got giant blades, and then you push the next person. It's not... You know how long I watched speed skating? As long as that race took. You know how long it took me to catch on? That was it.
Well, maybe
it was
he's just slow.
Now I understand.
He might be
just slow. I'm not casting any aspersions.
Chris,
I'm just saying.
Chris
it's
over
not
on our
hard.
Text line listening on MDX. Oh, Frank, he's got some words for you. He said, Frank, forgetting about yesterday's hockey games means he's just a casual fan. Ooh.
Them's fighting words. We're going to set up a board out front of the station, Chris, and you can come down and Frank will check you into it. We're going to... Wow.
Whatever, Chris. Chris, I'll be waiting for my text update from every game, and I better get one.
That's right, Chris. Frank doesn't play. Okay, this I liked. There's a Ukrainian skeleton racer. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name because... it would be disrespectful to an entire country. But on his helmet, he has pictures of athletes that were killed during the war in Ukraine. And originally, the IOC said, you can't wear that. And he said, well, IOC, you can go. I'm wearing it. And he has worn it, and it is very moving.
Yeah.
And listen, if you're a skeleton racer, they should be worried just about the fact that you could just, your body could explode on impact. Who cares what's on your helmet? It could just be the middle finger, and I wouldn't care because somebody's going 100 miles an hour on ice head first. I'm in 100%.
Does some of this seem, do we get so engrossed in the Olympics, not because of the sport of it, but because some of this does seem death-defying? Like, an average 100%. Person is not going to do these things. You are not going to do a 450-foot in-the-sky ski jump with turns and things, and in the middle of the night. Nobody's doing that except for these people who are way athletic than I will ever be in my entire life.
Well, no, I told you, that's why I like the Winter Olympics more than the Summer Olympics. There's an element of danger. The Quad God. You didn't watch The Quad God last night, Frank?
I did not.
Oh,
I don't even know who that is.
Ilya Malinin. He's the figure skater.
Sure.
He's the guy with the backflips and the quad jumps.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
I always watch figure skating.
He's dumb. I never
watch figure skating. Ask your wife. She'll know. She'll know exactly who he is.
But it looks like he's a human drill bit.
Oh, he's
boring down to the center of the earth.
Good for him.
He's insanely good.
Well, Michaela Schifrin did not win, despite the announcers telling us nonstop she's the best skier in the world.
No. More action tonight. Watch the Olympics. Not you, Frank, because we know you ban it. You're listening to Civic Media, the Civic Media Network. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us. This is Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. If you want to get in on the conversation today, 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. We were talking about the Olympics in the last segment, and Brian in Wausau texted in, as Jamie said, you can too. This is not to admonish Frank on his hockey fandom. Brian says, I'm a hockey fan, only Olympic sport I watch outside of the Olympics. I don't watch men's hockey in the Olympics because I still feel pros shouldn't play, and I thought backflips weren't allowed in amateur figure skating. When did that change? I think somebody had done one. A woman had done one a while ago, years ago, and now the quad god can do what he wants, Brian.
Yeah.
He is, in fact, the quad god. He flips. I don't think they get points for the back.
No, I don't think it
adds
anything.
I think it's just part of the performance that adds a little, spectacle to the whole thing.
Yeah. What was the skater way back, Scott?
Hamilton?
Hamilton, thank you. He did backflips. Brian Boitano did backflips as well. And then for a while, they weren't allowed to do them at all in competition. But
because you could break your neck.
Well,
Let's be honest.
What happens if your skate goes out from underneath? It's ice, after all. I mean, I don't care how much you're on there. Yeah. We see professionals slip all the time because it's still ice.
Last night, one of the guy from Japan who was following the quad god, he came out of a spin. And Jamie, when you're you got to land on the balls of your feet, and if the heel of your skate hits, that's when you lose the edge. I absorbed the most useless knowledge. I don't know why, like, that sticks in my brain, and now I sound like Brian must watch figure skating all the time. Nope, about 7 minutes every 4 years.
That's all right.
But I sound like I know what I'm doing. I'll reference a sow cow. I'll go back to the swirling hamel camel. I'll do it all.
It's all about how you present it. You don't actually have to know what the words mean. If you just present it with conviction, nobody's going to question you at all. Brian also responds back saying, no Iron Lotus yet. See the movie Blades of Glory, Scott Madison.
Quad God looks just like the guy for Blades of Glory.
Yes, he does. Scott in Madison listening on MDX says, Syria Benali used to do them in women's skating. I hope I pronounced that right. I probably butchered it. But thank you for the text this morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We appreciate it.
We will
it.
Continue updating the Olympics, much to Frank's chagrin, because I am giddy as a schoolgirl watching the Olympics.
It's so much.
I just can't get enough.
I honestly, we have so many things happening right now at on the Civic Media Network that I have not gotten a chance to sit down and absorb them as much as I normally do. But in years past, it has been up until 2-3 in the morning just watching the competition. Parker, you're nodding because I think that's why you got less sleep last night, because you were watching the Olympics, isn't it?
Partially.
Okay.
Partially,
all right. Well, yes. We don't want to know what the depravity that you were doing after the Olympics, so we won't ask about that. We'll just move on.
I can
on.
Only imagine. Well, here's the thing. It also is a distraction from all the really serious things that are going on, and it's a time where we can bond together as Americans because even if we look right up the street at the Capitol, things are going on.
Yeah.
Well, Robin Voss came out. We talked about yesterday them threatening to sue the government for trying to get relief after the floods. And now Robin Voss is hoping that the administration will reconsider its denial of federal disaster aid relief for the floods.
You know, Robin Voss, before he checks out for his 9-month vacation after this flurry of work until February 19th, is getting a smidge of his backbone back.
Hoping is not getting, demanding is a backbone.
Demanding is
a little kid seeing a pony and saying, I hope I get that.
Hey, it's all more than we normally get from Robin Voss against this administration. Okay. So I'll give him one of his little vertebrae, like half of one of his little vertebrae back. It's not much, but we're working on it.
At least he realizes that the people of Wisconsin need that disaster relief aid.
And let me be real. I'm not holding out hope for much more than this. But he obviously says that the Trump administration needs to reconsider that denial of the relief from that August 1,000-year flood. FEMA has actually turned down the state's $26.5 million request for 6 different counties, even though the administration approved a separate $29.8 million grant for homeowners in some areas. We talked about this a little bit yesterday if you joined us on the program. Governor Evers appealed that denial. He warned that the rebuilding costs could actually fall on local taxpayers. Voss is now saying that the state might step in if needed. He stresses, though, that this is the primary responsibility of the federal government.
Evers, it is 100%.
It is, yes. And Evers says that they're going to keep pushing for federal aid while helping communities in the meantime. There is a bipartisan state disaster aid bill that has been proposed to help FEMA if FEMA denies these requests. It's not passed the full legislature, though, as of right now. The White House is saying that disaster requests are carefully reviewed and that the federal aid is meant to supplement, not replace, state and local efforts. Again, the federal government not really understanding what their actual role is in supporting the states, even though they like to scream at us about states' rights and how states should be more involved and be able to do have their own functioning governments. But when it comes down to what the federal government actually is responsible for, it seems like they missed that day in civics class of how this actually works.
Well, and unfortunately, there do have to be contingency plans in place. And Robert Voss saying that, you know, the state would look into this. This is the kind of thing that we were talking about, the state surplus and the money that the state has. This is the kind of thing you can use it for. It's not an ongoing project that will deplete the entire surplus. You can set aside a chunk and say this is for disaster relief. And, you know, and then you just keep hammering that we have to dip into the state's money because the federal government is not helping us, which they are supposed to do. And now Robin Voss wouldn't do that, but that's where the Democrats would just hammer and say, we didn't get it. We had to use your money because the administration would not help us.
Right.
And but we have the money. So
we do.
We might as well help our citizens, because one day the states are on their own. One day they're the agents of the federal government. One day they have to follow
along.
We don't know.
We have no idea. You know, and
take care of yourself.
And honestly, right now, with the state legislature aiming to wrap up next Thursday, I believe would be the February 19th, looking into calendar, would be next Thursday. I don't know how much movement we're going to see on this. I want to be wrong, because there is a lot of infrastructure to rebuild from that flooding. There were a lot of homeowners, businesses that were affected by that. So I'm hoping I'm wrong. I don't see a lot of movement, but I feel like this is something that's absolutely crucial for those six counties and the residents, business owners. And so we'll see where this ends up, but it doesn't give this legislature a lot of time if they are planning on gaveling out on next Thursday. Now, you mentioned a little bit of a surplus, right? Robin mm-hmm. Voss has also made a little bit of news yesterday. Oh. It was a busy day for him. But, of course, in this flurry of activity, you've got to keep churning things through, Brian. Like, snap,
they
snap.
Legislate like an Olympic speed skater. Very fast for a very short time.
This is true. It is kind of like, the speed skating track. So he is saying now that he's willing to negotiate with Governor Evers on property taxes. He's making headlines for being a sitting legislature willing to compromise. Wild and wacky times that we live in. We've talked a little bit at length on this program about this partisan divide over property taxes and that 400-year veto that the governor used to basically get property taxes and that $325 per student credit and all of that, right? Well, now Robin Voss is stepping back from an earlier demand that any new property tax relief plan would include a repeal of Governor Evers' so-called 400-year veto. Voss is saying that a bipartisan deal to reduce property taxes could come as soon as this week. Hopefully those discussions are ongoing, because the veto repeal would have to wait until after the November midterm elections. He's emphasizing that providing relief to homeowners right now is the top priority, as it should be, right? Because mm-hmm. property taxes in this state, school referendums, it's all getting to be too much for several cities. Now, Governor Evers, his office is saying that any property tax relief plan has to still make sure that schools are going to get the funding they've been promised in the state budget. Republicans' decision to leave the revenue increases in place really contrasts with GOP gubernatorial candidate Tom Tiffany, though, who has made repealing the veto a central part of his campaign. So now we have the state legislative GOP at odds with their front runner for the governor. And at some point, they're going to snap into line, because that's what the GOP always does, right? Is there any question that that's going to happen? No, not at all, right?
Yeah, it's all right. Well, listen, there's a lot going on. This is a little insane. But as we said, the veto, the 400-year veto, is a little suspect. I know it's legal.
It is.
No question about that. It's legal. It's just, I don't know.
And let's be
real. A little too much power.
Let's be realistic for a second. Robin Voss is not a stupid man, right? He's been the Speaker of the House for, 13 years, I believe? 13 is where we're at, somewhere in there. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But at the same time, he also knows that this partial veto power is very important for a GOP governor as well as a Democratic governor.
Of course.
So he's going to hedge his bets, I feel like, here. The Democrats have seven candidates currently vying for the top spot to become the front runner. And I feel like maybe this is Robin Voss a little bit. This is just my take. Maybe hedging his bets just a little bit, that maybe the Republicans right now in the gubernatorial race would have a titch of an edge, and he isn't going to rock the boat, and he's not going to take the partial veto away from his own party if that were something to come to fruition in election season, right? I mean, he's a calculating individual. Let's put it like that.
One thing we can say about politicians, they are calculating. They are always scheming. They mm-hmm. always are looking down the road, and it's all basically to protect their power and the party's their party's power.
Right.
So that would not surprise me if you're absolutely right on that.
You know, and is this really a negotiation? I don't know if it is, because the state legislature, as we've been discussing this morning, is really in this last hour trying to end their session by next Thursday, which means they'd have that 9-month break. So are they really trying to move on property tax relief, or are they just kind of kicking the can down the road to see what happens in an election cycle? That's what I feel like at this.
Yes, it's senioritis again. They've got one foot out the door, and they are waiting to see, because November is going to be very, very telling, not only for the U.S. House and Senate, but for the state House and Senate too.
Now, there were some emails from a February 5th meeting as well that showed Evers offering a compromise: $200 million for special education, $450 million for general school aides in 2027, $550 million for property tax relief through the school levy tax credit, $97 million to exempt taxes on cash tips. And both parties right now are saying they would use part of that $2.5 billion surplus for some sort of fund relief. And Voss says Republicans have been negotiating with Evers for weeks to create some sort of bipartisan package that could potentially pass both chambers and be signed into law, which, you know, if that's what happens, and it's good for Wisconsin homeowners and the school system and education, and there's still funding, then I'm all for it. But I just, again, hedging bets, that's kind of what I feel like is happening.
I will not pass judgment now, which I usually do. I love to pass judgment.
I might be
but
cynical.
I'll wait and see. I am very cynical. That's what's kept me alive all these years, Jamie. A healthy cynicism.
Exactly.
And making sure I have a good Valentine's gift for the bride, which is important. What we're going to talk about next when we come back. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You're listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings in La Crosse on WLCX and Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. You can always join the show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And Jamie, that's what Tiffany did. Mm-hmm. She has a question that you wanted to answer.
Yeah, she is listening on WCFW this morning, 93.5 The Tap in Eau Claire. And she wanted to note that it's important to understand, or at least the way she understood it, this veto we talk about when it comes to this 400-year veto, does it require an increase of money every year? It actually allows the school districts to put it to local taxpayers to vote to implement the increase. And I went over to the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, because yes, you would be shocked that I have a subscription over there. But Wisconsin school districts are not legally required to raise their property tax levy to the maximum allowed limit every single year. A lot of them have to, though, to cover operational costs because of the state-imposed revenue limits and the flat state rate. Now, the state allows for annual revenue increases like that $325 per pupil allowance that's extended through 24-25, the 400-year veto thing. Districts can choose whether to levy that amount, and that's when they have to go to voter approval via referendum for any increase above the cap. So that's I believe what Tiffany is referring to. If that's not Tiffany, text in and I will have the answer for you tomorrow morning, because you know I love nothing more than a good challenge on these things. But that's how I'm understanding it. So yes, if you're going to go above the 325 cap, you have to take it to a referendum, and the school district does not have to raise it every single year. So that is how I understand the law at this point.
Understanding the law from a non-attorney.
Sometimes this is why I like places like the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, because they lay it out in like a lot of plain terms. So there is that option too. So sometimes if you just read really closely, you can figure it out. And let's be realistic. Some of these laws are made that it makes even attorneys scratch their head and go, huh, how does this actually work?
Legalese is not, the law is not written for the common man.
Yeah.
The law is written for, you know, nerds.
Exactly.
Yes, and I just called every attorney a nerd.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, attorneys. I'm glad you're here, because you can read over all kinds of things.
That's right.
And the problem with reading any legal document, even if you're an intelligent human being,
oh.
I will I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy in the room, but my reading comprehension is pretty good.
Right.
I can read over some legal documents, and I get the gist, but I'm like, why are all these extra words here? Can we just boil it down?
It's kind of like reading Shakespeare.
It is like Shakespeare. When messages should just be clear. It's Valentine's Day. Get your partner something. This is the question for you. What was the most elaborate or cheesy gift you've ever given or received for Valentine's Day? 855-752-4842. Guys, if you forgot, Valentine's Day is Saturday.
Yeah.
Get ready. The reason I ask this is I read this story, and I could not believe it to be true. But it is true. McDonald's is offering customers a special Valentine's meal this year. Oh, what is it? A red shake? Is it a special dipping sauce for McNuggets? No, Jamie. It is chicken McNuggets and caviar. Two great tastes that taste great together.
A pairing that is like, that's like peanut butter and jelly, let me tell you. This sounds disgusting.
It sounds horrible. And it's one of those things where it's like, let's make McDonald's. And I have no hate for McDonald's.
Sure.
McDonald's
is like
that's
a good fry.
Fine. But I like the McNuggets. I'm not gonna tell you. And about once a year I get an insane craving for a Big Mac. Like I have to have it that day or there will be carnage.
So I understand.
So that's fine. But there's a lot of fast food restaurants and things that try to up their game for Valentine's Day because those special things get people in the door and people are buying less and less fast food because it's expensive.
Like when you can do reservations at a White Castle and White Castle restaurants across
fantastic.
The country. Yes.
Or heart-shaped pizzas from your favorite pizza place.
Sure.
But yes, this is an upscale yet effortless celebration, according to McDonald's.
It is. And it's a kit, right? Yeah.
Yes, you get a tin of McNugget caviar. You get some creme fraiche and a mother of pearl caviar spoon, along with a $25 gift certificate. Are you laughing because you can't believe I said creme fraiche
I am laughing because the ingredients in McDonald's food is questionable always, right? And I agree. I love a good McDonald's.
100% pure beef.
But at the same time, what kind of caviar am I getting in a tin?
Yeah, I'm not trying McDonald's caviar. I've never had caviar. The first time I have, it's not going to be Mickey D's.
If I could get one, I would try it. Just because, how do you not?
Right?
It's high lowbrow. That's what they're calling it. High lowbrow.
Oh,
because
so
it's
bougie
going
on a
to
budget.
McDonald's for yes. I like that better. Bougie on a budget.
That's the name of my life. Yes.
Trademark that, Jamie.
And we'll do a budget.
Next Valentine's Day, if Lord willing, we're still here, we'll do a bougie on a budget Valentine's Day promotion.
So I went to the website, McNuggetCaviar.com, and I got the Edge function has crashed. So is the website just crashed? Or let me try to spell it again. I'm sure it went like hotcakes.
Everybody wants to do it.
I looked a second ago, and they're sold out.
Are they sold out?
Oh, of course they're sold out.
Are they, like, how much are these? How much were they, I should say? There we go. Okay, I must have typed something wrong. That was weird.
Well, if they're giving you the $25 gift card and a tin of McNugget caviar, which I'm guessing has got to be the top tier of caviar. I know Beluga is a popular caviar. McNugget, another one on the social scene.
So what they're showing in these photos is that you take your little nuggie and then you put the creme on top of it. And then put the caviar with your mother of pearl spoon on top. And then you have like a nice little appetizer and they're sharing it over a box of McDonald's fries in these photos with silver plates.
Man, cue the Marvin Gaye because that is leading to some sexual healing. That is... You feed me caviar on a nugget, and baby, we are good to go.
If it wasn't caviar,
wake me
I might
up
actually
when September
try
ends. Yeah, I would try it. I would try it. But, well, don't forget, fellas, it's Saturday.
Yeah.
But we got to go.
We do. They're telling us we're
today.
Done. They're telling us we're done. It's 7:59 Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network.
Talk to you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.